For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome, everyone. So we started the Book of Kohelet last week, and we were talking about many things, really, why it was read on Sukkot. Sukkot was a time when people have lots of parties, and it's a very happy holiday. It says on Sukkot, V'samachta b'chagecha, that you'll rejoice. And so people think a lot about happiness, or how to get happiness, or what kind of happiness lasts. So that's a time to read the Book of Kohelet, because it helps a person focus on what's real happiness or what's real joy. And so that was one reason. The other reason we talked about was that got to catch my breath. I sprinted over there. I didn't want to hold up the... The other reason was that a sukkah is a temporary dwelling. It represents that things in this world, they don't last very long. You can enjoy a physical thing, a person, and they can be in their house, but it's just for a certain amount of time, and then it passes. Whereas spiritual things, they last forever. And that's pretty much the theme of Kohelet, is how a lot of the things that people chase after in this world are hevel. They're hot air. The main thing that people chase after is honor or money, and it doesn't bring them much happiness. If you ever, in fact, they have all these columns about how the different people, the movie stars and royals and wealthy people, the problems they have are unbelievable. You would think that they have all that money and they have all that fame, that life is great. And if you actually see what happens to their lives, they commit suicide and they have one trouble after another. And we all say, oh, if only we'd be so rich and famous. You don't want to be rich and famous, believe it or not. So Shlomo HaMelech, he wanted to try to figure out what life was all about. And he was a very wise king, and he researched it. And so we're right in the middle. I want to go back to, let's go back to verse 9, because this is one of the more important lessons that he has. He says, Ma shehaya hu sheyia. And it's really the study of history, how things repeat themselves. You see certain patterns. I don't know if it's part of getting older, you tend to see that, things that have happened already, or young people think it's brand new, it's never been done, it's all exciting, and I've been there, done that, you know, I've seen this happen before. It's just a... And so what was is what will be. Umashinasa, hushiyasa, the thing that when they call something new and improved, it's the same. It's a different packaging. It's really the same. The ein kol chadash, this is the expression. There's nothing new under the sun. Things really don't change drastically. You might package it a little different. They might, but there's nothing new. There's new fads, you know. A few years ago, there was this. Everyone had to have this way, you know. You have to have a skinny tie. You have to have a big tie. You have to have big glasses, small glasses. You just wait long enough, and you'll come back in style again. But there's nothing new. There's nothing new under the sun. And sometimes people think they have something new. I guess in the previous, in the beginning of the last century, people thought that there were new ways to make the world better, whether it was socialism or communism, or they had different ideas about something that was new that would change life for the better. And after passing through that century of Stalin and Hitler and all the various forces that existed, we saw that life didn't get better. That's what's a little bit depressing about this Islamic movement, because we feel like we're going back. Beheadings, it's like a page out of the Middle Ages, you know. But it's something that's It's just a repeat. Yesh davar shiyomer reis. Some people say this is brand new. Hukfar hayu. This is really in previous generations. As shehayim ufineinu. I often find that many new things, if you just look in Pirkei Avos, the sayings of the fathers, it talked about it. It's there. Verse 11, and these new things, these early generations, they don't create a permanence. And again, the purpose of the book is to help us find which things are worthwhile, which things are really have meaning to them. Ein zikron de rishonim. There's no memory of those early things. The gam lachon, even the later things. If a person focuses on things that are just empty, hot air, so there'll be nothing. You know, a person passes away, there's nothing left. So now, verse 12, it's kind of funny over here. All of a sudden, we learn who the author of Kohelis is. I need Kohelis. I was Kohelis. Now, he says a very funny thing. I was king on Yerushalayim. Now, what does he mean, I was king? Isn't he king right now? And wasn't he king on the whole Israel? What is he saying? I was king over Yerushalayim. So it's a very interesting chazal that at one point, Shlomo, at his high point, he ruled over the land of Israel, and he was the most influential monarch in the world at that time. The cradle of civilization was in the Middle East, and he was the leading ruler. And people would come to him from far off. So remember from the Africa, the Queen of Sheba, everybody knows that they came because they heard about Shlomo HaMelech. They heard and they wanted to learn from him. And every country in the world wanted to have a princess in the land of Israel, wanted to have a daughter. They wanted open relations with the country and they wanted to learn about Hashem. It really was the beginning of teaching countries about the winning them away from idolatry. Until then, everybody believed in these statues and these idols and the sun and the moon. And this was a new concept, that there's one Hashem and that what Hashem stands for. And so people would send emissaries to Israel to learn about it. And one of the things that we don't think about often is that the Beit HaMikdash was for non-Jews too. In fact, it's called a house of prayer for all nations. The Beis HaMikdash. The temple was a place where people could come from all over to pray. That was the purpose that he to teach people about what was really important in life. But
weren't a lot of his wives idol worshippers, and that's why he had them live outside?
So what we're going to see is that he talks about relying on his wisdom, and so he thought that he was smarter and smart enough that it wouldn't affect him and that he could control it.
There's a teaching.
Some people say that when he was younger, he could control it. But as he got older, things didn't happen the way he envisioned. Or that specifically because you're not supposed to be smarter than the Torah. The Torah says that, you know, a person is not, it's not good for a person to have too many wives or to be involved with this many foreign countries. A person shouldn't say, well, I'm different. I can handle it. I'm above the law. The law doesn't apply to me. There's a tradition that Shlomo got punished and that in the beginning he was the ruler over the entire world and then he lost control and he was only the ruler in Yerushalayim and then eventually he lost that and he was not even the ruler in his own house and there's a medrash that says that they put like a demon took over the king, and he wasn't. Shlomo got sent away, so he had to wander. What it means is that sometimes a person loses control. They no longer are what they used to be, and that definitely happened in his old age. That Shlomo was not the same person he was. Now, according to many people, he got it back. He did teshuva. He tried to do teshuva. So when he's saying, "I am Kohelis," I used to be influential. I used to have big groups that would come to see me, and I used to be king, but I lost that control. And the biggest proof of that, to us, a king doesn't just mean the person that sits on the throne. A king means somebody who's a leader, who people follow. In his own house, his wives weren't following him. He was so sure that not only that these women that he married, that he told them about Hashem, of course they would never worship idols. How could they? He was so convinced of his personality and his bearing that nobody would ever think to do that. That's foolish. I can control them. And in the end, he didn't control his own household. So how is he king? King means that he's so in control, he leads people. And instead, he wasn't even in control of his own house. He wasn't the king of his own house. Because in his own house, they were worshiping idols. So he was saying, Hayis, I used to be king. That's reflected in the books of the prophets, that there was criticism against Shlomo. Shlomo tried very hard. According to many, he wanted to be the Mashiach. He came close to being the Mashiach. And he himself saw that he made mistakes. So, but that's hinted to in this verse 12. Anika Hayisi, I was the king of Yerushalayim. But what about being king of the whole Israel? What does he mean, I am? I was, I will be. Verse 13. Nasatis libi lidrash latur b'chachma. I figured that I would work on wisdom. I would try to figure it all out. Kol asher nasa. Now, sometimes people talk about stuff in the heavens. They talk about what happens after you die. They talk about Kabbalistic things. And to some extent, it's silly, because what do we know about the angels? What do we know about what goes on in heaven? What do we know about what goes on after death? Why don't we just focus on what's going on under the sun? In other words, let's talk about what happens in front of us. Now, we have different teachings from Torah about different things, but we can't really know what's going to happen, what happens up in the heavens, and some people claim to know certain things. Even King Solomon, as wise as he was, he said, let's stick to what's under the sun. I can't go above the sun. Let's stick to what we can fathom. Sometimes people like to, talk about that, what happens after this and what it'll be like and what. It's nice, but it's a wise person realizes that he has to focus on what's real. Let's talk about what happens under the sun means on the earth. We can deal with that. It's in the middle of 13. Inin Rahu Nasan Elkim Ne'anama. Hashem created distractions. Hashem creates lots of distractions in the world, and we have. We have many good things to do, but people get distracted. He talks about it the following. Isis kolamaisim. I've looked around and I've evaluated what people do. Takashasha, under the sun. Vinei hakol hevel rosh ruach. And there's a lot of things that go on in this world that are not good. They used to call it the rat race. I don't know where that expression came from, or the because sometimes when you if you have the mice and you put them down, they all do what they're like pre-programmed. They go after the food or they don't. So like you see, like the young people, they're shaking, they're moving, they want this fancy cell phones and the fancy cars, and they have strange relationships, and you talk to them and they have drugs and they have and they want to travel and they want the credit cards and you, as an adult, you look at them and you think, it's all hakol hevel v'rosh ruach. It's disturbing to some extent when you see that people are just like wasting their time, or they're involved in things that are us ruach. They're like a disturbing things. They're not positive. Now, there are good, there are youth that are doing wonderful things and showing caring and doing mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. But you look out in the world and you see that a lot of people are involved in things that are not so good. Now, the worst thing is that there are certain things that people do that can't be fixed. And that's what he mentions over here. Ma'uvah, sometimes there are things that are crooked, lo leo choliskon. Once they go bad, or once it's not done, it's too late. And sometimes if a person isn't where he's supposed to be, he can't go back and be there. Lo yocholimnos. If the person missed something important and they weren't there, so you weren't there, you missed it, you can't do anything. It's too late to go back and relive one's life. And so he's saying over here that if the problem with getting involved in bad things are sometimes you break something and it can't be fixed. Or sometimes you miss something important, and if you miss it, it's too late. So a number of things that the rabbis discuss. One example, we have some mitzvahs that you can only do at a certain time. So, for example, if a person has a mitzvah to say the Shema every day, so if you sleep late and you don't say the Shema, so you can't fix that. You can say Shema tomorrow, but you didn't say Shema that day. If you miss a Passover Seder, if you, it's something that if it's gone, that opportunity is gone. It can never be fixed. It's gone. He says the another example would be if somebody sins, they do something immoral, and they have a child. How do you fix that? You know, if a person sins, they can be sorry that they did something. When we get older and we realize we did something wrong, a person can change. They're a different person. But if they created somebody because of something they had done wrong, how do you fix that? Someone's whole life is they created a human being in a relationship that shouldn't be. It's someone else's spouse or with some, you know. And so there are certain things in life that are so crooked that they just can't be straightened out. He has different examples that are brought. But that's the reason why it's important to figure it out. Because if you go, sometimes you can turn around and go back and everything will be fine. And sometimes it's too late. You missed it. So those are the two problems. Sometimes a person can make a mistake that can't be fixed. Or sometimes it's too late. They can't be counted. They missed it. 16. Debarti ani im libi. So I had a talk with my heart. That was very interesting, being in touch with one's feelings. And we're a strong believer in this. In other words, that you have to talk to yourself. Don't tell anybody. Talk to yourself. Meaning that we believe that we have we're created in the image of Hashem, and there's an inner sense of what's right and wrong sometimes, but we don't communicate with it. And a righteous person or a good person tries to have quiet time where they do introspection, where they think about, you know, my day, my week, my month, my year. This time of year is the perfect time. This is the month of the year before Rosh Hashanah, where we think about, you know, what do we do this year? Are we proud of what we did? Do we want to do more? Last year we talked about doing certain things. Did we do them? You know, but who do you have this conversation with? It's yourself. Have a conversation with your heart. In your heart sometimes knows, you know, what's, so he says, that's what he says over here. He has a conversation with Debarti ani im libi. I talked to my heart. I had a heart-to-heart talk. Lamer. And I said the following. Higdalti, I've grown up, vahosafti, and I've become more wise. And I, until now, there weren't that many people that, initially the kings focused on security and they focused on, defeating their enemies and building up the country. And Shlomo is one of the first kings that could focus on wisdom, on what was important. Akol Asher Hayu Lefanei, all those who were in front of me, Al Yerushalayim. And Velibi Ra Harba Chachma, and I saw lots of wisdom v'das. 17. Vatna Libi Ladas Chachma. And I wanted to study what's wisdom. And if you study what's wisdom, you have to understand what's not wisdom. Sometimes it's easier to do the opposite. I may not know the right way to go, but I know what's the wrong way. Sometimes it's very easy to see the wrong way because you could learn from other people. So he says, you need to see both. And it's important because if you don't think about it ahead of time, a person gets involved in it. The das holus v'sichlus. He says that there are two things. Hallel means like things that people praise or they talk about, or you know, you ever go to a rock concert or where you don't enjoy the music and you see it, the people look so crazy, like they're just they lose all control. Yadati shegam zehu royin ruach, and I see that also what people praise or what they think about, there's whole debates. And today, like, you can go back and you can see what the scientists talked about 100 years ago and you laugh at it. It's so ridiculous, some of the theories that people had about different things, and today we know different. Kibaro chachma. Now he says an interesting thing that I've been debating how to explain this. He says, sometimes you could be too smart for your own good. Mm-hmm. With too much wisdom comes too much anger. And in other words, Shlomo said, Hashem said that if you have too many horses, The horses came from Egypt. They were the exporter of the horse trade in the Middle East in those days. Egypt is not, in those days, Egypt was one of the superpowers of the world. And the original horses that they had were bred in Egypt, the thoroughbreds. And if a country wanted to have lots of horses, you would have to go down to Egypt to get the horses. They even made sure that the horses that left, they made them sterile so people couldn't produce those horses. Well, they were well-known breeders of the... And the Torah actually says that kings... today people, they have lots of cars, they have lots of tanks, lots of planes. The kings in those days would have lots of horses. They have a place in Yerushalayim they call Solomon Stables. You ever seen them? So even though the Torah said that kings shouldn't have too many horses, so Shlomo said, well, that's for the average king. Because the average king, if they have too many business contacts in Egypt, they'll become like the Egyptians. They'll learn from the Egyptian culture. The Egyptians worshipped idols. The Egyptians were immoral. But me, in this situation, we would never fall for something that foolish. So we can have lots of horses and there'll be no problem. And so he had lots of horses. And he said, well, the average person, if they have too many wives, how could they possibly control all those wives? But that's the average person. But Hashem gave me so much wisdom, I can control those wives. And so a person can be too smart for their own good. What often happens is the smartest child, they've done studies that sometimes the smartest one in the class isn't the one that's the most successful. Because sometimes they're so smart they get bored and so they tune out and so they don't do well. Or they think they know better than the teacher because they're sometimes people that are very smart, they don't talk with their colleagues. They don't learn lessons that they could have learned. And so with a lot of wisdom comes sometimes a lot of anger. Nobody likes a smart aleck, right? That's I'm debating about that, but I don't think he means Torah wisdom. He definitely doesn't. He means that a person even has to be careful with his own intelligence. Sometimes his own intelligence makes him a goof. There's a Yiddish expression like that. It's the Torah says that the Jewish people is Am Chacham V'Navon, is a very wise people. And so the expression goes, but they need a bissel seichel. In other words, you could be very, they're very brilliant people out there, but they lack what's like a seichel, which is a common sense. And so the... But with too much wisdom comes a lot of anger. But Yosef does, and sometimes a person knows too much, it causes aggravation. You don't have to know everything.
That's the news today. Very aggravating.
That's right. So that's his message. So he begins that we have to study what goes on in the world, but we also have to realize our limitations, and we have to see that... Sometimes you have to see which things are not positive and where they go. Chapter 2. Amarta ni believi. So, you know what? The wisdom isn't... wisdom brings a lot of aggravation. Knowledge of itself doesn't necessarily bring good things. So, you know, let's look to joy. Let's try that. Everybody, let's have a good time. Let's look to... Now, joy is a very good thing. In fact, in this week's Parsha, there's a prediction that that we will anger Hashem and he may have to punish the Jewish people. And some people say the Holocaust is predicted and other things are predicted. It's in this week's, we read it always before Rosh Hashanah. At the very end it says, do you know why this happened or this could have been prevented if you had served me out of joy? In other words, because you didn't serve Hashem out of joy, that's why this happened. In other words, that Hashem wants us to be happy. And some people just, there's even a Hasidic leader that used that as a primary focus. That was Rabbi Nachum of Breslov. He said, mitzvah gadol elios b'simcha. It's a big mitzvah to be happy. So, and there's no question because he saw that too many people, how do you daven and say thank you Hashem if everything is rotten? If you're the kind of person where nothing is right and you don't like the world, so then how do you get up there and say, oh, thank you Hashem, I love you, everything, you hate everything. So a person has to learn to be happy. Hashem wants a person to appreciate the world. A person has to learn to enjoy things. So. There's another rabbi, his name is Rabbi Victor Miller. He passed away about 10 years ago. who talked about, he used to give lessons about enjoying the fruits, like eating a watermelon. One day he brought a watermelon to class, and he said, you know, like sometimes you can see simple people know it's something to learn how to enjoy life. Sometimes the people that have what you would think are the worst difficulties are the happiest people. And it's a certain outlook, it's a certain way, it doesn't cost anything extra. And we're challenged. Sometimes chemically it's hard for us to be happy or to enjoy things, but it's a goal. So the only thing is, with that goal, happiness when it's based on nothing also is no good. And that leads to like drugs and alcohol and, oh, I gotta be happy, let me drink, right? So that's, because that's not a real happiness. So really that's what he wants to get into here is the first chapter he talked about seeking out wisdom and how sometimes people get led astray and knowing what's good and what's bad. So now let's talk about happiness. Let's talk about things that make people happy. Maybe he'll discover things in that way. So Amarta ani b'libi, I said in my heart, Lechana, you know what? Let's do something fun. Let's go out, let's get away from the school, let's get away from the books, let's try partying. Maybe that's where it's all at, right? Lechana naska b'simcha, let's try out the joy. Urei b'tuv, and let's see the good. And see v'hinei gamu hevel. But unfortunately, he tells you right away, though, before you even get to the punchline, he says, no, it's not, you know, joy alone, there's a hangover after the joy. If it's the wrong kind of joy. So, and he uses the word schok. Schok is more like a jest. What's really interesting is that Isaac, the name Yitzchak, comes from the word schok, from he will laugh. He will be joyous. And there's the idea that if a person sees in the future that in the end he will laugh. In other words, we work hard and we serve Hashem and we make sacrifices because we know in the end it'll be worthwhile. In the end we will enjoy. But if a person just has chok, which is like a scoffing, Amarti Mahulu, he said that I see that it's a waste. It was simcha, and what is joy? Verse 3, Tarti Belibi Limship Yain. So, you know what? Maybe, whoops, I skipped a line. Here it is. Tarti Belibi. I said in my heart, you know what? Let's try the wine, let's try the meat. Let's see how that goes. Let's try the things that people will enjoy in the world. So he decided he would try these stimulants. And in the Middle East, they had lots of drugs, too, by the way. It's still a lot of the drugs pass through the Middle East. But even in ancient times, they grow around there. I'm not sure if exactly, or maybe it's on the spice route. Muhammad was drugged most of the time. He used to see the angels, and it was like LSD, you know. It was like a lot of the people were drugged, you know. It was part of that the Middle Eastern culture where people did do drugs. It's not the terminology that we use of doing drugs, but they had like a pipe that they smoked.
Yeah,
or
with the old
hookah.
People, they
a hookah, out. Right?
Hookahs made a comeback. There are stores now that sell them.
But you sometimes just on the streets, the old Arabs, they would sit there and be stoned out of their mind. They'd look happy. They're sitting there, or they're smoking away, or they're doing their thing. They don't have. They got away from alcohol. It's very interesting because they decided alcohol ruined a lot of lives, which makes a lot of sense. But because they didn't replace it with something else valuable, so then you have a lot of crazies, you know, and that's why there are drugs and they have people that are cutting people's heads off and doing other. It is important to see that these things don't lead to a positive thing, but you have to replace them with something. So he said he tried the wine and the meat, and he was king, so he could afford really good stuff. To this day, there's a famous restaurant called Solomon's Table. He was known for having the table. Like, you could find all kinds of food all year round. What an interesting thing. You know, you talk about appreciating life. We have available to us fruits all year round that in previous generations, they only had them in the season.
Mm-hmm.
You would only get certain things at one time in the year. We can walk into the supermarket anytime we want. We can get almost anything.
You know, shifted from Africa, from South America, from and year round we can have the richest, most wealthy people. You know, they talked about that. It was unbelievable that King Solomon could have all these things. We have them all the time. We have freezers. We can freeze them, and we can pull them out of the freezer. Like that, we have more delicacies available to us than our previous generations had. But so I think we have to be grateful when we can go to the supermarket and get, you know, whatever foods we like whenever we like them. You know, that's a. So he said he tried limshuk b'yayin as fustri to try the wine, v'libi noy b'chokma, and he tried to observe this. Trying to observe the drinking and the wine to see what it would do, and there is an idea that people need to relax. There is that idea that people need to relax, and a little bit of things in moderation are good. A little bit of wine and meat until. So he started with that to see what's the way to go. Maybe that's all everybody needs is a few drinks every night, and everybody will be happy. People won't be so uptight, and so. So he would try that. So believing noy b'chachma lechos b'siklus adasheira ezer tov l'vneyadam. I wanted to figure out what would be good for people. You know, then he could make recommendation. Yes, it was done in that mispar yomecha during the days of their lives. So verse 4, higdalti masai. So he decided to do. This is something people do, I would say almost all in our society, and that is to have things. In other words, we get involved in happiness is about things, about having things, having cars, having nice lawns, having nice clothing. And so Shlomo said, all right, let's try that. Benisu libatim, I built houses. Netati li kramim, I built vineyards. Asisi li ganos, I had gardens, pardesim, and beautiful orchards. That used to be one of the things they would do in those days, they'd have these little gardens that would be really like perfect, you know, where everything would be in the right place, and they'd have air conditioning, so they could go in the garden and have the shade and have the fruits and the colors, and they would stimulate by seeing different colors, different things in bloom. It's really a beautiful thing to have, and the wealthy people would have their own private gardens. Where's that one? There's one in Georgia that they made it into a park. It used to be owned by some wealthy people.
Callaway.
Is it Callaway Gardens? Yeah, I think so. I think that's the one I was thinking of. But that was the way, you know, before. Today people have other types of things. You don't hear about that as much, where they have their own private garden, where they. But he thought, all right, let me try that. That's the way, that's what the wealthy people are doing. They're building gardens. I'll build gardens. Natatipam eats. I'll have trees, fruits. I'll have nice streams. You know, if you do it right, you got to have everything. You got to have the garden, the lashkus, and you have to have an irrigation system and a forest to make eitzim. So he did that, and we're going to see shortly that doesn't solve things. You always need a newer model. There's more gardening. There's more. I often, you know, because Shabbos morning when you wake up early, there's. You see two kinds of people. Some people either going to shul or they're working on their lawn. And to some people, their lawn is like really, really important. Oh, there are some people that wash their cars. There are people that are like washing. And it's so funny because I walk and I'm thinking, does it got to shine so much, you know? And what if there's one weed that, don't get me wrong, it's nice to have a nice lawn, nice to have a shiny car, it's nice to. And they just, but people really get into that, and you're able, when you're not into it, and you're on the outside, you can laugh. You know, you see it, you walk the show, and you come back, and they're still washing the car. Yeah. I think it helps, too, seeing that if King Solomon, he's admitting that he made these mistakes, or he tried these things to see, and then he realized. And so this is our chance to learn from him, like, you know. You know, certain people are working on their second million, you know, they realize it's not going to. So he tried that. Then he tried the other. Kenisi Avadim. I bought lots of servants. The Shifka, maid servants, the B'nai Bayis Haile. They had an article in the Wall Street Journal about 2 weeks ago that the really big houses are going out of style because the very wealthy people would build these huge houses and they would need an army to take care of it. Because you have to hire a butler and a maid and a gardener and a security person, and then you lose your privacy. And then not only do you lose your privacy, it's like running a company, because they got to report to you. You know, the security guy has to tell you, oh, you know, there's a the squirrel tripped the wire, and then and then the maid, this other maid didn't show up to set up the clothing, and the you know, and then the electricity and one of the air conditioning system in one of the rooms doesn't work, and so they're here to fix it, and you got to supervise. And they found that after a while, that these big, huge palaces are not very enjoyable for a vacation. You know, they thought that just having this very huge, and so now they have to try to sell them. And no one, and so usually get somebody young who thinks this is going to be wonderful. Until then, but the people very rarely like stay in them very long. There are like maybe a dozen of them that are out there, and the media likes to show you these things. Like they, you know, they show, wow, it has so many rooms and it has so many. Each room has its own bar and its own garden, its own terrace, its own.
That's it. What does Kohelish mean, the word?
To gather people.
Gather people.
In other words, he would speak in gatherings. He would have groups that he would learn with and address.
Okay, thank you.
So it's similar to the word kihiwa, like a congregation.
Oh, a community.
A community.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's what he tried. In other words, he was going to have all these gardens and all these orchards and all these edifices. And then he tried, well, all right, let's try having the most slaves and the most servants. And let's, you know, maybe let's have big flocks. Maybe I'll have the most cows. You know, have lots of cows. You know, I have plenty of cows. How about sheep? Let's get lots of sheep. They're collectors. They collect art. They got to have every piece of art. I don't see it as much. I used to see like stamp collectors and coin collectors, and people would get into. And they would have to. Today you have like baseball card collectors and movie paraphernalia collectors, and they had last week they had people that were into science fiction. And it's they live it. They dress up in it. They follow the certain characters, and they buy the magazines every week to read up on. It's like a type of religion, since they don't have a community, or they don't have it. So their religion is the science fiction community. So they got to know when the latest movie's coming out and what the actors are doing and what the next plot is, and there are people that just they collect, and there is something to collecting that you get involved in it. And you get busy with it, and then you get a passion to, I must have the next one, I must get the, mm-hmm. I gotta have the latest this and the latest that, and I heard that, and a person feels, he gets distracted by the collection.
And their kids are gonna throw it out anyway.
And the kids are gonna throw it out anyways, that's right. That's the irony of it, that's really the.
And it's even gotten to be a sickness, they call them hoarders.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Right, yeah. Right. People, I remember they used to save old magazines, National Geographic and Life, and then, like you said,
comic books is worth a fortune today.
Yeah. My mother gave all of mine away.
When I was away in yeshiva, some kid knocked at the door and said, "Do you have any baseball cards in the house I'm buying?" They gave away my baseball card collection, and that was that. So
yeah. There goes the future.
He tried the cows, he tried the sheep, mikoshar, whatever you could get a hold of, and it was more than anybody else at that time. And guess what? He wasn't happy. He realized that wasn't enough. So he kept on going. Verse 8. Kanisili, you know what? Let's try gathering gold and silver. Kanisili gam kesev. He tried silver with us. And then he tried things called segulas malachim, things that the kings like. I was reading that in the Middle Ages, not even the Middle Ages, the kings used to collect, what are those, dwarfs. They had collections of dwarfs, little people that would be, the czars had little, they would try to find very short people and hire them to do little shows. There was like a dwarf collections, and some of them had little zoos where they would have different kinds of animals. And the kings have their own special things that they like to keep them occupied to collect. By Medina Sicily, and he tried that, and he tried different. Then he tried to do musical things, sharim, sharos. You know, let's try get rock stars and singers and albums and all kinds of male, female, whatever it is. But tanugas b'nei adam, and he thought things that people like, things that give people pleasure. Now he didn't just collect one or two of them. He said shida v'shidos. He had boxes and boxes of these things. He collected them by the boxcar of what. Things that made other people happy. Now, you might have thought that he didn't have such a big collection because He kept on changing, right? He said, the Gadalti Vesav, verse 9. He said, they got more and more, Mikosha, more than anybody else. But, Af Chachma Amdali. But in the end, my wisdom took over. Some people spend their whole lives collecting these things and doing these things. And he experimented in them. He tried to see what was this all about. And we could save people a lot of time. You know, they just read Koheles and they won't have to start all these collections. And verse 10. The kol asher sholi einai. And he said, whatever my eyes saw, lo atzalti beham. I had to have it. Lo manatius levi mikol simcha. And I tried in my heart any kind of joy, anything that makes people happy. Ki libi sameach mikol amo. And my heart was, he figured that this will bring me joy. This will be happiness. So we're all waiting, we're all anxious to see what the result will be, right? In other words, he's telling, he did the best, he really knew how to throw a party, he did everything he could. And then he gets to the punchline, then I looked, and everything I did, and all the work I did, and guess what? He was back to where he started from. It's all a waste of time. Hakol Hevel. It's, now, Hevel is like it's like a wind. It looks like something at the moment, but then if you try to grab it, it's not there. It like dissipates. It's like wind.
Almost like a mirage.
It's like a mirage. And so that's the Ein Yisroel Taz Hashemesh. So that's kind of the lesson we'll stop here with, is that the lesson of collections. Now, there a person has to know how to. It's okay in life to have hobbies, and especially if the hobby makes a person happy. It clears a person's mind. It gives them a distraction. It's healthy. It helps them appreciate the world. There's something called a hobby, and then there are things that consume people, where they miss important things because they're so involved in their hobby, they're not sensitive to the people around them, or they miss important times in life. And so it's important. He's not saying, Judaism never said that you go on a mountaintop and you eat grass and you fast and you turn away from the world. And King Solomon's not going to say that either. But he's just saying it's not the end of itself. The parties and the food and the wealth. If a person lives just for that, then he's wasting his time, because that's a roes ruach. That's an evil spirit.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.